Guys, my second guest tonight on the program, and in fact our first guest ever, to be honest, because Peter is on here so often, but my first real guest here is Elle, and she's from Adelaide. She's been an Adelaide Football Club supporter for a long time and the bane of my existence in that area, to the point where I will not watch football games featuring my club with her anymore, ever. Mm-hmm. And I've only done it once, and that was enough. But she's also a player for the Old Collegians Rugby Club here in South Australia and is involved in some development and other things there. And she can tell us about those shortly. But welcome to the podcast, Elle.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. We're just glad that we've actually got a woman on the women's podcast. It's one of the great eccentricities of this podcast system that we have. Elle, tell us a little bit about what you do with rugby in South Australia.
Oh, Jason, look, I've been involved in the Old Collegian Rugby Club as a player for about 10 years now. And I think that anybody who's sort of half competent and plays a sport ends up somehow on the committee helping organising something at an administrative level. So I've also helped out on the club committee for a number of years, being their newsletter editor. So I got to see about and understand a little bit around the operations of a rugby club, which is probably, there's a lot of parallels with any sort of sporting club at the grassroots. So not only being a player, being on the club committee, and for about 5 years I've served on the Women's Advisory Group, which was a group set up consisting of a women's rep or two from each of the women's teams. And there was a bit of a program going back about 4 or 5 years ago to engage with the women at that level, at the administrative level. And the Women's Advisory Group had a direct tie-in with the SA Rugby Union. And we used to have monthly meetings. So I helped sort of forge the direction a little bit of the women's comp. So we agitated, things to the union like timings for the grand final, where the women would be scheduled in on the day before grand final day, not even on featuring on grand final day. So we fought pretty hard year on year to get scheduled on grand final day, but we were at 8 a.m. and as you know, Jason, you have to turn up early to a game to warm up, so we'd often have to get there at 7 a.m. just to put our boots on anyway. So I've also been involved more recently with a friend of mine, also a current player called Kim Evans, who's masterminded a rugby sevens club. So the rugby sevens, as you know, is a different format to the 15s. She spearheaded it and we helped her out in coaching and other administrative sort of capacity, run the club from the end of the 15 season, which is around about August, September, through to January. So we're just finishing up now, to give not only the women in the summer season somewhere to play and keep fit, but also the young girls who don't have anywhere to play rugby, similar to the AFL, where they turn, 12 or 13 and then they're not allowed to play with the boys because of the physical differences. So we ran over summer, we ran a girls comp and a seniors comp to get new girls interested in playing rugby, who off the back of the Rio Olympics, we had a lot of interest in after the gold medal of women who wanted to play the game. They've seen it for the first time. So we immediately had somewhere for them to come along, and we did it in Victoria Park in the city. It's a very central location. And yeah, so that's been a really eye-opening experience for me. So not only playing, helping organising and fighting the good fight, so to speak.
And how does one get involved in this if someone's listening and they want to get involved in and they're in Adelaide? How do you go about signing up for that?
We have very active Facebook groups under Firebrand Rugby, which is the Sevens rugby club that we ran. Or you can simply head over to sarugby.com.au and look up any of the clubs locally. There's a phone number for SA Rugby, and if you give them a buzz, they'll help you out and find a local club. There's 5 women's teams at the moment, Woodville, well, there's a couple in the eastern suburbs and a couple down south. So we've got the city quite broadly covered. But, yeah, if anybody's interested in playing, Google, Facebook, we're all very, very active in the women's community. So if you make mention of it or tag or anything, or even on Instagram, we'll find you.
Excellent. Now, we are a big footy podcast, so I guess we should discuss some matters pertaining to football.
Excellent.
You're a Crows fan, for better or worse. You have been for as long as I've known you, at least. So I'd say lifelong fan, but I'm not sure how old you are, and I don't want to imply anything here. So I'm, you know, for the purposes of this conversation, you're 21.
Well played, Jason. Well played.
My mum was 21 for about 15 years before we cottoned onto it. It was, anyway, it's another story. What is it? The AFL announced last year that there would be a women's competition in 2017. They were bringing forward that concept. It was originally going to be a 2020 thing. They brought it forward to 2017. What were your first thoughts in that, Matt?
Oh, wow. So from the rugby purist in me was quite frightened, because we know what that means. We need, that's probably a degradation of our catchment and people willing to play rugby, because you put out a big carrot out there and the women will follow. So they'll move away from it. The AFL purist in me was tremendously excited. It was something that I've dreamed of doing or participating in a very, you know, from a very young age. And there was, you know, you can't be what you can't see. So as a youngster learning, navigating life, you know, you don't know how much effort it takes to push, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Put shit uphill. And what I mean by that is changing the mindset of not only just the sport, the sporting community, but it's society in general about, you know, men do this and women do that. So as a young kid and looking up, and there's no women here, well, I better go and do something else, and you land in basketball or whatever. So the rugby story is interesting. I can get to that later. But now as an adult, when I've learned what it takes to change mindsets through the rugby community, I realise how hard it would have been back then. So I didn't benefit from it, but I'm so excited that you're walking around Theberton Oval and you see all these young girls with their face painted wearing a Crows guernsey, and that they're going to get a chance to play. I'm so happy for them, and I'm so glad that they've had all those people behind the scenes working so hard. They've also got Gillon McLachlan to look up to, who is the visionary, but everybody else's hard work behind the scenes. So they'll never meet those people, but they're the ones. I'm really happy for those people who fought so hard about it. So happy and sad. One thing that I think, going back to the rugby purist, so that I put my rugby hat on, my friend Kim, who started the Firebrand franchise, she said to me very early on, she said, if you had to draw a Venn diagram of society and you've got women and you've got men, so in the women part, draw another Venn diagram in that, and you say, well, of these people, only some of them are willing to play contact sport. And then in that group in South Australia, most of them will probably want to play footy because they, you know, they're footy. And we as rugby end up in a very, very small part of that diagram because we're in an AFL-dominated state. And, you know, it's Australia, whatever. So what AFL's done for rugby, I think, is a good thing, because it's opened women's minds up and it's letting them think beyond the societal boundaries that they're normally brought up in and think contact sport's okay. So I think it's actually going to benefit the rugby community anyway, because it's going to increase that size of women wanting to play a contact sport, you know. So I guess that remains to be seen. It's the first year. We've, a couple of our girls have gone to train with AFL girls, but they're still coming out with us. And I think some of them are going to play both if they can, which is crazy. That's probably, I'm in two minds. I'm excited,
but wary.
But I'm you know, interested to see how it sort of all pans out for the rugby side.
I think it's an advantage at the moment in that the AFL's not really taking it. The season's so short at the moment. For the actual AFL season, it's only 8 weeks, and at the professional level, there are people that are still, you know, Emma Carney, who was playing cricket for the Southern Stars, Aaron Phillips, who, you know, was playing basketball at the last Olympics. There were people, Adelaide, Jenna McCormick, played for Canberra United in the soccer on the weekend, and she'll be playing, you know. I honestly don't know how that game went, so I don't know if she's going to play for Adelaide next week or not, but... you know, there's people coming from multiple sports, but they'll go back to their communities for the next 2 years while the AFL works out how long the season's going to be. So there's a lot of scope for people to actually do both and benefit sport in general, not just benefit the AFL.
Yeah, I would really hope that we're working towards a goal here where any professional sports person can do it professionally and do it, you know, and get paid and have an income from it. You know, it's, you know, how long has it been since we've seen blokes do that, I guess, really is the flip side of that coin. It's been a very, very long time. So I understand what you're saying, but I look forward to the day where they can just choose the one and stick with the one and get income from the one and go from there, yeah.
I think we're getting to that point. I mean, cricket's leading the way in that regard, I think, in terms of a previously male-dominated sport. I mean, netball is always there, and they're doing great things in terms of their wage increases and the fact that their new wage deal gives them a huge advantage in that some of them will be getting paid 40 to 50 grand a year to play netball now. The WBBL players, they're getting paid about 15 grand a year plus whatever they get for national and representative duties, which is not quite enough to live on, but it's a step in that direction. I think there's a big and the AFL guys, the AFL women, that they're getting paid anywhere between $8,500 to $25,000, depending on where they were selected and stuff. And so there is definitely scope for improvement. It's still better than, and I'm going to draw some ire for this, but what some of the W League players are getting, where the FFA had to introduce a petrol allowance to actually pay, because these guys were paying thousands a year just to travel to their games. And you know, the horror stories where they had to get changed outside the stadium because there's not enough facilities and things like that. And I think if there's one thing the AFL clubs and the AFL women's clubs are going to show everyone else is that if you give people the right facilities and the right support, women can do just as well at these things as men can.
Did you hear about the quarterfinals for the Aussie Pearls, the Sydney Seven, the Aussie Women's Sevens team? That's their name. So the Sydney Sevens was just on the weekend past. I don't know if you heard, on the quarterfinal were relegated
to the oval across the road, the training oval.
The training oval.
Yeah, it's, holy moly. And these are the Olympic gold medalists. So there's a lot of work still to be done in some areas. And I did notice as well that there were some comments from some Matildas players, the national women's soccer team players, who were locked out of Princess Park on Friday night and who were watching the game. And there's a lot of talk on Big Footy today and the last couple of days and on various other online forums about whether this is actually a historic moment for women in sport or not. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, wow.
Is it just a historic moment because it's like the first round of the AFL, or does this actually have a meaning for women in sport in general?
That's such a tough question, and I think that is all going to depend on the perspective of the person answering the question. Here's my perspective, right? It's historic because I know, and I was watching the Channel 7, they had a special segment on women's footy and the history of it, and I wasn't really sure whether there was a game, the earliest game was about 100 years ago, and I wasn't entirely certain whether that was under the AFL banner, whether they actually had labels on their shirts that said AFL or what. So let's operate this discussion on the presumption that they didn't. So this is the first time that women have worn an AFL logo on their shirt. And if you think about that, that you stamp and you brand somebody, and you know, when you go to a school and everybody's got the same uniform on, and that's a signal to everybody that if everybody comes to school dressed the same, everybody's treated the same, everybody gets the same respect, everybody's listened to equally. So for me, that logo on the shirt, and you know, they're wearing a Crows guernsey that looks like the men's team, they're equals. That's a huge symbolic gesture. It's a huge symbolic meaning behind it, that these people, and leave all the crap about payment and where they're playing and all that sort of stuff out of it, these people to our club are just as important as these other people. Oh, but the other people got a penis, you've got vaginas, everyone's the same. So I think it's historic in that sense. You know, this is like, you can treat these situations a chicken and the egg. What comes first? The grassroots, build it up, or you have the top CEO in the country mandating how it's going to happen. So we had that. We've got the Gillon McLachlan saying, we're going to do it by 2020. Oh, by the way, changed my mind. We're doing it 2017. Brought it forward. And you've got a powerful man, well, not the most powerful man in the country, but probably one of the highest paid ones, saying, I want men and women to be treated equally, and this is how we're going to start. So it's not going to be a big bang. It's not going to all happen at once. It's going to be progressive. We're going to have teething issues, and he knows that, but he had the balls to do it. The previous one didn't have the balls to do it, and the tide was coming, and he didn't jump on. So it's historic. It's historic for a man to be at the helm of it, and it's historic to have everybody involved in it, and the bloody turnout, 25,000. Can you believe it? I couldn't believe it, honestly. People getting turned away.
I don't think anyone could believe it, because they would have been prepared if they believed it.
Yeah.
But I think McLaughlin said it the other day about the AFL when he said it finally now means that we represent men and women equally in a way. For mine, it brings by starting at the top and at the same time as you're working up from the bottom, and the AFL can do that because it has those resources that other leagues and other associations they don't have. But by also having massive media support that, again, other people just don't have, they leveraged everything at both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
In terms of grassroots, and the Queensland Football Association up there, they are doing massive things with juniors that are just starting here in South Australia now. The sample is so far behind what's happening in Queensland and Western Australia in terms of the women's game development over there. But by starting at the bottom, by starting at the top with this league and saying, okay, we're going to do this now while we're working away from it, it gives the people at the bottom, those little girls that you saw at Theberton, and thousands of them that were at Princess Park on Friday night and at Casey Oval in a monsoon on Sunday afternoon, and at the Western Oval, it gives thousands of these little girls something to look up to and gives them current heroes to work towards that they never had before, if you know, assuming that they followed football. Yeah. So, for me, it's a big deal. I've got a daughter, you know, and while she has no interest in sport whatsoever, if she did, I would have very much liked her to be able to say, you know, I can play football now.
Yeah.
And I can aspire to being that kind of player and play the chosen sport.
So I guess on the flip side, I've got a son and he's two, and it's one less question I'm going to have to answer if he gets older and he says, Mum, why can't women play footy? There's one now, by the time he gets there, they'll all be playing footy, so I won't have to explain that one to him. So,
I mean, I hope it doesn't affect. I mean, I'm a Queenslander by birth, so rugby's in me in a way, but I hope it doesn't affect you too much, Elle.
I don't think so. I think the ARU's got a significant problems that aren't related to diversity that they've got to face on a world scale. We've got the French league, the top 14, not stealing but enticing players and paying them way more for the Australian players to go and play overseas. The Japanese league, you've got the cross Tasman brethren who can do it better than us with less money and less people. We've got a very, very big problem in the ARU at the top management level. That's diversity isn't even entering into it at the moment. But so the women's participation for the ARU has been coming on leaps and bounds in the last 5 years. Statistically, there's lots and lots and lots of women signing up to play, but participation and I guess market space, you've got to share with the NRL, you've got to share with the AFL. And the AFL are killing everybody in the in sign-ups at grassroots, in their junior development programs, in their elite programs. They're stealing basketball kids. I probably shouldn't say that word, stealing. Luring is probably a better word.
It's like Gillon McLaughlin's walking around with a Haitian bag full of little kids.
So I guess that's probably Dimitri's legacy, right? All of that foundation stuff that he laid down, or the previous CEO, I can't remember who that was, this has all really been able to be springboarded from now with the women. So the AFL is in a great place right now. So I think that will benefit in the long run just by the sheer fact that it's going to open up women's opportunities and open up their eyes to playing contact sports and to break that stereotype of a dainty little flower who needs to sit and knit to some fierce bitch who's going to go smash people on the field.
Well, I think the women's games on the weekend kind of put paid to that whole dainty thing, because they were very, if they had one thing going for them, they were very hard at the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, and as I've been ad nauseum for 4 days, the skills might not necessarily be 100% yet, and that's to be expected given they've only had 2 months' worth of professional training, that some of them hadn't even, you know, had barely seen a football before November the 1st. Some of them hadn't played football in years competitively. So, you know, given enough time and enough training, these girls are going to be as good as anything else that's out there.
I think some of the spectators around where we were standing at the footy game on the weekend were surprised even with the physique of the women. Mm. So you look at someone like Erin Phillips who going in for a tackle and you could just see bicep and tricep bulge out as she's going for it and big quads and big calves and people going, oh, my God, I'm like, you know, being surprised at how a woman can look. You know, it's giving a different role model, something to strive for that isn't necessarily looked upon favourably. So I like that as well.
Mm. Crows have got the Bulldogs on Friday night.
Mm.
Game will be shown live into South Australia on Channel 7.
You're not coming over for dinner, if that's what you're...
I'm not going to, but I will be going to Theberton Oval to see the Crows play the Blues in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, should we sit together?
No, we shall not, because I shall murder you if we lose.
When you lose. Yes, anyway.
I'm a winner. But how do you think the Crows are going to go?
Oh, it's a really interesting matchup, isn't it? I think that the Crows are obviously going to win. That's because I'm biased. I didn't watch the Bulldogs game. I did watch the Cullen Collingwood game and I watched the Crows GWS game, but I saw the stats and it's tough to tell because of the conditions the Crows played in. Mm. But Erin Phillips up forward, oh, geez, you got to stop her. I think that another thing the Crows did really, really well was their second efforts in the forward line, so their pressure to keep the ball forward when it was in the 50. So the tackling efforts, that second effort, get off the ground, make your next tackle, was phenomenal. So I think it is going to be won and lost in the Crows forward line, to be honest with you. I am looking forward to it, so just let me know if you want to catch up with me.
Yeah, well, I think we will, but Peter has forecasted a 50-point loss to the Crows on Friday. Wow. the dogs at home, they're going to be hard to beat, El. And it's they're a good team, and they played pretty well Friday night. Saturday night.
Do you think it's going to be a lockout again?
Look, it's an interest. I think the dog, because the Dogs have such a good grounding in women's footy, and their supporters are really behind it. And Adelaide do have a small following in Melbourne, larger than Fremantle's, I would expect. It's going to be interesting to see whether the crowds and the enthusiasm that went in round one continues over to round two. So I see no reason why they're not going to pull, you know, 8,000 to 9,000 on Friday night, if not higher. It's a marquee game. It's a big game. The Dogs are still undefeated. Adelaide are undefeated. It's got all the makings of what would ordinarily be a blockbuster game. We just don't know how people are going to keep responding. And I honest to God hope that the enthusiasm keeps going on the way it has.
Yeah.
And it could well be. I'd get there early if I was going to the game.
Do you think that in the men's league that nowadays the home ground advantage seems to have disappeared somewhat, right? So you can play a game in Perth and you can and it doesn't really matter. They're so professional because they do it all the time. So they don't have this real... Do you think that that's true for the women's league?
Well, grounds have no character. So, like in modern AFL, because they're all curated to the nth degree. There's, you know, you don't see mud pits, and I can't remember the last time that I saw an AFL game called off for lightning. I think we're seeing some character, and that old that old suburban ground feel, which people have been raving about for 4 days, is very true. You know, there's a romanticism about it that people enjoy, and I think if nothing else, this will prove to the AFL that there should be more games scheduled in these kind of areas, which they do a little bit with the NAB, the JLT series now, and women's football. So anything that gets us back to the suburban grounds is excellent. El, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Jason, for having me.
It's
really
been
enjoyed
greatly,
it.
greatly appreciated, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, mate.